I'm Naomi Klein. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org.
From Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles, this is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, October 28, 2008. The NAACP challenges Virginia's Election Day procedures, alleging the state hasn't done enough to accommodate massive voter turnout. Next week's election could determine the country's approach to trade. We'll hear about the future of the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. And new federal statistics indicate hate crimes against individuals based on their sexual orientation is up nearly 6%. I'm Aura Bogado. Stay tuned for that and more after this news.
I'm Nell Abram with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Congo's army is abandoning a town in the eastern province of North Kivu. Tens of thousands of civilians have already fled the area. Heavily armed Tutsi rebels are advancing rapidly on the city just north of Goma. UN peacekeepers left the region and were unable to evacuate some 50 foreign aid workers. The town had provided shelter for refugees displaced by nearly 2 years of fighting in the tin mining region. Opening arguments began today in federal court in San Francisco in a trial to determine if Chevron was responsible for a deadly clash between Nigerian forces and activists occupying an oil platform. From KPFA in Berkeley, Max Pringle reports.
The trial will determine whether the San Ramon-based oil giant is responsible for two deaths and several injuries among people who shut down the Parabay oil platform in 1998 for 3 days before Nigerian armed forces flew in on a Chevron contractor's helicopter to respond. Larry Bowoto, one of the Parabay platform protesters injured in the incident, brought the case. Both sides agree that Bowoto and other members of the local activist group concerned...
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's the Bathrop Spears Broadside Show for October 30th, 2008. Stay tuned.
About a choice.
Free and Just Kidding and Free the Air. Name of the album is, my goodness, is it To Fan the Flames of Discontent, or is it Due to the Silly Laws of the City of Santa Cruz, we at Just Kidding have devised this new album called Any Donation Accepted. Perhaps the longest title ever given to an album. Perhaps not, and perhaps that's not the title. Anyway, the name of the show you're listening to is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. The name of the station you're listening to is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, or freakradio.org if you're on your computer. I'm Robert Norris, and for the next 2 hours I'm going to be running by street interviews and actually a long interview, well, not that long, actually, about 20 minutes to half an hour, that I had with Assembly candidate Bill Monig this morning, another Democratic Party candidate, but you can judge for yourself what you think. We may have some in-studio guests talking about the free school and the classes they do or don't give. We'll see if those people show up. They might. Who knows? And who knows? Your calls as well. You can always call into the show at 427-3772. 427-FRSC. My focus is local activity, local activism, local politics, and also the rights of poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz. So that's what I'm up to. And you can let me know what you're up to at 427-3772 if you call me. If you want to reach me off air and leave me a message, maybe you want to be a guest on the show, maybe you're interested in passing on some information that you don't want public, or maybe you've got some other concerns, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, or 423-4833 is the number to call. It's a 24-hour voicemail, and you sometimes actually get a real person, so give a call if you got something you want to tell me, but you don't want to say it on the air, at least not initially. You can also come to a HUFF meeting. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and they meet every Wednesday. We had a meeting yesterday at 9:30 in the county building in the basement in so-called American Cafe. That's cafeteria in the basement at Ocean and Water Street. So you can go to court and then come to the HUFF meeting. Boy, I sometimes get those two confused. Don't get to the free radio meetings much, but you can actually become a member of Free Radio and come to those meetings as well. To become a member of Free Radio and to get your own show, go to freakradio.org, fill out an application, make a tape, or a CD so we can hear how your show sounds, what your notion is, what your idea is, how you're going to do it, and then we'll let you know. There are, I understand, free spaces, and there are open air times, so it's a real possibility if you want to be on the air. You think that what you're interested in passing on isn't being put up there and perhaps needs to be, well, let us know. You know, you could well be right. Another reason to get in touch with us is to give us money. We need money. We need equipment. We need supporters. This is by the seat of your pants radio station. We don't get no money from the government or from large nonprofit donations. We aren't a—I don't think we are a 401c3. I don't think so. Or is it a 501c3? Anyway, it's—we are not one of them official nonprofits, and so we don't have a lot of, you know, big tax deductions that come our way. If you give us equipment, if you send us money, that's what keeps us going. And if you want to do that, go again, go online to freakradio.org or give a call to our message line, which is also a way of asking questions or giving us PSAs that you want to announce or criticisms you may have or concerns, 427-4523. 427-4523 is our message voicemail, and that's usually monitored by some faithful, devoted Free Radio techies who are there taking those messages and keeping the station alive where it's most important, where it counts, kind of at the guts of the station. The on-air number to call if you want to talk, however, is 427-3772. I'll be watching the board here for any incoming calls, and you'll be able to talk on the air. So think about that. So I'm going to begin with some street interviews, and it may not be the best quality. I think the tape recorder had its problems, maybe battery problems. Probably that's what it was, but I think we'll still be able to find some audible stuff here. I like to hit the streets, usually on Pacific Avenue, and interview people about what's been happening to them, particularly regarding their contacts with the police and the so-called hosts, or the little kind of para-police characters who walk around in their uniforms, acting like they're helpful, but actually they're sort of the advance squad of the merchants that want to sort of shoo you away if you don't look good or present a nice PR face if you're a tourist. It's kind of unfortunate. They don't even know the laws that they are charged with enforcing. It's a whole matrix of anti-homeless laws that was passed to give the police the power to move people along that they want to move along, regardless of the Constitution. And they've never really been effectively challenged in either federal or state court, so that really lies ahead of us. Anyway, here's some interviews to begin with from a few days ago, and then we'll be getting into a longer interview this morning with Bill Monig, who's the likely victor in the race for assembly here in this district, covering Santa Cruz and Monterey counties and a couple of others, too, no doubt, in the crazy gerrymandered way the legislature has broken down these days at the state level. Again, 427-3772 is the call-in number, so call in if you like. In the meantime, listen in and let me know what you think.
Hearing 6 o'clock on Saturday evening, the 25th of October, talking with J.P. Bremen. Acapulco. JP, your report is?
Somebody's got a ticket for panhandling in a group of two or more.
Yeah, who was the officer who gave these citations?
I don't recognize him. Young, newer one.
Short, tall,
average height, maybe 5'10", 5'11"?
Not Officer Winston.
No, definitely not. I'm familiar with his work. We're talking to the hat man with a Spira couch.
And a home-cooked dinner, too, on the sidewalk. A rather large, kind of floppy black hat with a couple of bucks in it. Your name, sir?
Dana.
Dana, any word from the borders scene where we're standing talking to you?
Nah, it's been all quiet today. Been a nice day, plenty of nice scenery, good people passing by. Everything's cool.
A smile from you as well.
Oh, definitely. I always share smiles. I beg for smiles more than anything else. I actually purchased a dozen red roses today from a street person that was walking by selling roses, and then handed out all 12 long stem red roses to individual ladies as they walked by if they would accept them.
Have you gotten laid recently?
No, but that doesn't matter.
Have you fallen in love?
Yeah, but my heart's been broken many times.
Wow. Saga of the streets. We've been talking with
Dana.
Thanks, Dana.
Thank you, Robbie.
So here's a man with a worker sign. How's the worker business coming, sir?
Well, everything's very, very slow compared to the 90s when I was doing the same thing, holding a sign, and it was full work. It's coming in dribs and drabs.
So how long have you been out here today? Because you're directly in front of the Boyer's door.
Pacific Avenue here, right across from the Gap for kids. And you've got your backpack and a couple of items with you. pretty clean and well-dressed, you know. I mean, you're informally dressed. You have a green sweatshirt on, a Hyannis blue cap, a Massachusetts accent. How are people treating you?
I think the people are fantastic myself. I think they're the best anywhere. I think they're probably more giving. They'd like to be more giving than they are. But I think that has a lot to do with their personal finances, which is tied into the economy.
So have you been offered work today?
Not today. Yesterday I got a couple hours. A gentleman asked me to clean out some gutters for him. But today and Saturday is usually a good day for the homeowners. Nothing around.
How long have you been out here today?
I've been out here in front of borders probably about an hour today. But I was on River Street most of the day. I spend the first half on the upper part of River Street and the second half in front of
San Lorenzo Lumberyard?
San Lorenzo's. And usually Saturdays was always, the weekends were always great for homeowners.
Now, is there an increase in the number of folks standing in front of the lumberyard these days?
At first I thought there was, and I guess maybe in spurts there are, but it's definitely there's definitely less people asking for help than say 7 or 8 years ago.
You mean people hiring you, or you mean people looking for work?
Well, I'd say less people hiring. I'd say it's down probably about on the 1 to 10. It used to be about a solid seven. I would say it's about a 3 now.
Wow. Now, what about the number of people seeking work?
Well, that's a hard one to call because it depends what type of work that they're seeking. If you're talking about day labor, a day type of work, there's quite a few. But it's a hard one to call. It's a gray area because you can't really tell. You can't really tell by the numbers because the economy affects certain occupations more than it does others. But as far as the building goes, the building is going to zilch nationwide.
Right.
That's a nationwide thing. I'm sure it's a mixture of nationwide and California, state problems.
Are you outside or inside here in Santa Cruz?
I'm outside, but I'm outside out of choice. I've probably got the best sleep in my entire life in the past 5 years, sleeping outside. It's in an area where you'd never expect to find a good night's sleep. I found one.
So no hassles by police?
Up until today. Of course, it's a day at a time. It's subject to change, but I've been fortunate. But I'm kind of tucked away.
How long have you been out here?
In Santa Cruz, or how
far? Outside, is it?
So I'm starting, probably finishing up my third week.
And so, are you generally indoors when you're in Santa Cruz?
Both. I would say when the rainy season comes in December, and the temperature starts to drop, you try and seek shelter. It becomes more of a priority. It goes right to the front of the line, I think, along with everything.
What kind of work are you looking for?
Well, I'm traveling, and I'm moving around. And I'm just looking for a day work where you get paid daily with cash. And because I go down fast, but I come back fast because of my needs. My needs are a lot smaller.
So. We've been talking with?
Ken Cuddy.
Thanks, Ken.
We're here with the infamous Black Rose.
In front of Borders. Black Rose, you have your art materials are out. You're looking as fetching as ever. You have a... You're making something?
Yes, this is an African mammoth moth.
Mammoth moth.
The green and yellow moths that I found in the picture.
That's a painting or drawing?
I want to relax today and paint.
So, this is the same general area where you got the hassle before. Actually, it was across the street. But how's it been last week for you? We interviewed you about a week ago.
Nobody said anything to me on the governmental side of things. You know, I've seen police officers around, no direct eye contact. And the people in the streets, I've had, like, locals come up to me and people that I've seen in the streets generally come up and say, hey, you know, I heard what happened to you. Good to see you out. What happened? You know, asking questions.
Nothing.
Any witnesses come up and offer you their name and address and phone number?
Yes. Actually,
got some of them. You better keep those numbers to, just in case of a problem.
Come to me and said, you know, if you need.
And generally, there are no further tickets, no further threats, no further move-along?
The tickets, because they gave me the date now that I need to go down there by, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm not going to have the money to do it.
So what was your charge?
This last one was resisting arrest, but I wasn't resisting.
That's a misdemeanor. That they probably gave you a specific court date, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is that court date?
The court date is November 19th. I'm going to be down there November 16th or 14th. See, it's already getting bumped.
How exciting. Yeah, I recall this was an incident where you yourself were simply, actually, were up here on this corner, and I didn't see it, but I got an account from a couple people that you had just been, not to mention you yourself, gave me an account that you, you were spare changing?
No, I don't spare change.
All right, remind me
I
what it was.
Singing or I read poetry.
Singing and reading poetry.
I barter, I do not spank.
Well, being in public without adequate money, as you know, is criminal in our society, so. You probably were violating certain unspoken customs.
I think I was only 24 and a half blocks away instead of 25.
Oh, yes, the infamous forbidden zones from the ATM machine, yes. Well, at least you've learned your lesson.
Actually, what happened, as I recall now, because Black Rose was in the studio and gave us a lengthy interview, was that she was accused by Officer Winston, she believes that's who the officer was, of panhandling... Or no, singing after dark, which he told her was illegal. But, of course, it's not illegal. It is illegal to make excessive noise at any time, and the standard for excessive noise becomes different after 10 o'clock at night and before 8 in the morning. And this was, I think, in the early evening when he approached her. Winston is getting a reputation for a lot of inaccurate citations to people, claims that, you know, they have to... move along, or they're in violation of rules when they're not in violation of rules. So the rule he claims they're violating doesn't actually exist in the way he thinks it does, at least that's what I'm beginning to find, as well as, of course, claims that he has been violent by at least two individuals, one of whom claims he was kicked in the face by Winston. And again, I guess the complaint was made to the police department, and of course that's now very secret behind closed doors. We'll never know what's going on there, because the department won't tell us. Anyway, here's some more interviews from the street with a Black Rose.
Aren't you a Black Rose?
Never. I never give up.
Never surrender.
We have another artist working here.
My name is Dreamcatcher from San Diego.
Really are catching a few dreams. It looks like some very detailed work. There's a large feather that you're outlining in some detail. Any... you got some other work you're showing us. There's a multicolored...
A chakra tree.
She's going to get one of your bangs.
What's your customer here?
They call me Dreamcatcher. They call me Dreamcatcher because I...
Dreamcatcher.
I draw Dreamcatcher.
Yeah, they're mostly dream shields, I would say.
American of origin.
And Dreamcatcher, I believe, is Black Rose's partner. He does these great drawings. Very detailed, very careful, and are articulate and discreet kind of drawings, where every line is very carefully drawn. And it's he presents his artwork in front of boarders, in case you happen to be walking by. I apologize for the quality of the recording; it's pretty bad, and it's because of bad batteries. But I'm going to be working on that. Usually I'm in better shape with my recordings, as regular listeners know. And, of course, if you want to talk on the radio yourself, there won't be any dragging of the boy. There, speed up. You know, there won't be either. You'll be able to actually hear other people will be able to hear you speak. So feel free to call in if you have any thoughts. If you see anything on the streets you think is worthy of comment. We have Halloween coming up, of course, with Triple Fine Zones tomorrow night, and there's going to be a cop watch happening. I actually will be one of the cop watchers. I've done this for the last few Halloweens. Sometimes I've come up with some interesting video footage of excessive force by police officers, or at least excessive numbers of police officers responding to a trivial incident in a kind of a paramilitary fashion, which happens, actually... every day of the year, around the clock. I mean, it happens pretty regularly. It seems to be the new style of the Santa Cruz Police Department on Pacific Avenue to over-police and bring in a whole bunch of cops to deal with some small incident, kind of the shock and awe approach to local law enforcement, which, as you can guess, I'm not fond of, and I'm glad to see that some folks are interested in documenting it. We might get rained out, so that's a possibility. On the other hand, we might not. And we're going to be gathering at 9 o'clock, for those of you who want to do a little cop watching. Come on down to Pacific and Cathcart Streets, right across Kitty Corner from the Taqueria Vallarta. That's on one corner. We're going to be on the opposite corner where the 1010 Pacific building is, where that large apartment building is, on the other side of the street. It's on the other corners you'll find, you know, Chianti's and Taqueria Vallarta, and I think there's a sports shop or a clothing shop. It used to be Johnny's Sports, and it's now some other shop. But we're going to be on the corner at 1010 Pacific at 9 o'clock tomorrow night with video cameras. Bring your audio recorder. Bring your costume. Who knows, whatever you want to bring with you. Bring a camera. Bring a notebook. Or if you're giving out flyers and with the idea of influencing the election, we're encouraging people to vote for the ABC ticket, Anybody But Coonerty. That's the mayor, Ryan Coonerty, who's running for re-election on the... I'm a civil libertarian who likes to take away civil liberties downtown, but supposedly supports them up on campus. Of course, up on campus there are votes for that kind of thing, and downtown there are votes against civil liberties, at least in the kinds of quarters that Mayor Coonerty, who is also deeply engaged in the management of the bookshop Santa Cruz, regardless of his exclamations and excuses. I think that's... Let me put it this way. I haven't examined the books or the roster of the bookshop Santa Cruz, but he's been observed coming in and out of the bookshop through the back entrances, and it's a family business, I think. That's, in fact, one of the problems with the whole Coonerty regime over the last 4 years. We're talking about Ryan Coonerty. He's been on the council for 4 years. He's pushed for legislation that primarily has been concerned with special interest legislation for his employees, the merchants around him. Let me put it this way. I'm thinking of one particular piece of legislation, a piece I've talked about far too much, the parking lot panic law that was used most recently to attack the drum circle next to the Wednesday Farmers Market. And again, it was apparently up there yesterday being used again. They fenced off the areas that drummers usually use to drum under the trees, and the drummers, of course, took down the fences, rolled them up, and put them off to the side, or somebody did. I assume it was somebody, either a drummer or somebody sympathetic to the drummers. And the community proceeded to have its usual Wednesday afternoon festivities. Why it should be necessary to violate the law and remove fences to do this is something that Ryan Coonerty needs to answer and has not. He has some sort of facile, glib comments like parking lots are only for parking, which, of course, flies straight in the face of Santa Cruz traditions. Parking lots and parking garages are used for a lot of things. The trash orchestra rehearses on the top floor of the River Street parking lot. Square dancing happens up there. And this happens without permits or fancy bureaucratic processes. It happens because the space is open, the space is unused, and people need places to go. In downtown, there is no plaza. The parks are closed at night, again, thanks to a right-wing city council's pseudo-security mentality. It's actually kind of part of like the war on terrorism abroad. We're working on the fear of the criminals, the fear of the terrorists, the fear of the drug dealers. All these things are used to create more power in the political and police arena, and the excuse for greater control and the excuse for clamping down on lifestyles, which some members of the community don't like. And also getting rid of visible poverty, just clearing it away, jailing it, intimidating people who are poor, putting up fencing off areas like the area in front of New Leaf Market, and closing it at night even though nobody is using it except people who have no place to go but to are looking for spaces to hang out. It's a deliberate attempt to get rid of such spaces. Or most recently, removing benches across from the Del Mar Theater on the other side of the street, near Cold Stone Creamery and elsewhere, where recently there was a kind of a smaller musical groups were gathering to play music. Apparently this part, again, part of the brainstorming of the brilliant plans of the redevelopment agency, the Julie Hendys, the people who want to, through backroom maneuvers, orchestrate what spaces are open and what spaces are closed in downtown. And Ryan Coonerty is really a big part of that. He's been working with the downtown, it's called the Downtown Working Group or the Downtown Task Force. I can never remember the name of that group, but it's three city council members, him, Cynthia Matthews, and Lynn Robinson, who meet behind closed doors with staff members and the city manager, the real power people in the city government, and make decisions about removing benches and other kinds of activities, which essentially they remove resources for all of us, but they criminalize poor people because if you haven't got a bench, it gets harder to sit down. It's illegal to sit on a planter box. It's illegal to sit down on the lip of low-lying lips of most planters. There's a couple of exceptions, but that's generally the case. It's illegal to sit on almost all the sidewalk. You have to go out 14 feet and be sure you're 14 feet away from all sidewalk cafes, including there's no sitting between a sidewalk cafe that's outside and the curb. There's no sitting within 10 feet, might be 14 feet of a crosswalk. There's really very little space left to use for the community. And, of course, what the police usually do is they just ignore these laws, except when they want to drive people away, and then they use them to harass people, just like the sleeping ban. The sleeping ban, the law that makes it illegal to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night, is a completely preposterous law given the fact that there's shelter space for, what, maybe 60 to 80 people tonight if we're lucky. That's probably an overestimate. There was a new shelter that opened up at a homeless service center, about 2 or 3 months ago. And there's also still a couple of church groups that are being ferried to churches and buses by the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, or maybe they're being told to come directly to the churches. I'm not quite sure what's going on with that. If anybody's got specific information, let me know. But there's 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there, and so whether it's 60 or whether it's 80 or whether it's 40, it's obviously wholly inadequate. And that's the basis on which the Ninth Circuit Court, the federal court in the Jones decision and later the Jones settlement, told the city of Los Angeles and the LAPD they couldn't go by around arresting people for violating the city code that prohibited sitting, sleeping, or lying down on the sidewalk. In Santa Cruz, we have an even more draconian sleeping ban, which bans sleeping. It doesn't ban it at all hours, but it bans it in all public places. So it's not just on sidewalks. It's everywhere that's in public. And even in your private car parked on a public street, it's illegal to fall asleep. And now, because of the Coonerty law, it's actually illegal to read a book in a parking lot or garage that is owned by the city. If you can park in a private place, well, in other words, if you go to a business parking lot and you're parking there, then, you know, you can read a book, or you can work on your computer, or you can talk to your son or your daughter or your mom, or you can chat, but not if you are in any of the city's 10 square blocks of parking lots and garages. That's what I estimate the space that is now being forbidden amounts to. That's the amount of space. And that's because of Ryan Coonerty. And this is the guy who teaches constitutional law, who's asking all the students for their votes, who claims to be the candidate of the youth. So we're going to be telling people Friday night, tomorrow night, on our cop watch, we would like to see anybody but Coonerty. And actually, most of the candidates are pretty bad. All the recycled candidates pretty much suck. The former mayors, the former council members, some people in this radio station support Tony Madrigal. I don't. Some people support Tim Fitzmaurice, and although Madrigal and Fitzmaurice have done a few good votes, the general impact of what they've done is bad, and they don't take responsibility for the bad stuff they've done. And when they're called to account for it, they sort of smile and slide, or they got to get moving, and they don't want to show up, and they want to be interviewed. They don't want to talk about these things. So there are actually three candidates that you might want to consider voting for: Cabrera, Kenyatta, and Craig Canada. They've all have their problems too, but at least they talk about police misconduct. They support the open use of public spaces. So that's going to be coming up on Tuesday when you get a chance to vote. And I'm hopefully going to have somebody in the studio. I still haven't got somebody scheduled yet to talk about the propositions, the state propositions, and what's involved with those. So you're probably going to have a number of stations and a number of commentators talking about the issue, and also, of course, a number of newspapers are covering the issue. There's a lot of online stuff. So I tend to stick to what I know best, which is who the police are harassing downtown, which police are doing it in terms of the accounts I'm getting, which city council members are actually even talking about doing something about it, and the answer is really nobody. I mean, Madrigal has gotten a lot of publicity for briefly mentioning the possibility of racial profiling and maybe economic profiling, and that one of the reasons he opposed the triple fine zones on Halloween, which I think are going to begin, not quite sure what time tomorrow they begin, but watch yourselves downtown. The police have not only, you know, you get a triple fine, but they are getting increased power. They're increasingly bold. And keep an eye out for the large cop watch sign. We're going to try to have a cop watch sign as we walk around that you can see from a distance and call us over if an incident is happening. Or bring your own video camera with you just to be sure. I mean, there might be some interesting costumes anyway downtown to keep an eye on. It's not a bad idea. What were your experiences last Halloween and the Halloween before? What have your experiences been with the police in Santa Cruz? Perhaps you haven't talked about it on the station or publicly before. If you want to, you can. And the call-in number here is 427-3772. 427-FRSC, 427-3772. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. I'll be right back. And that's Skidmark Bob from Just Kidding. Down so goddamn long. It looks like up to me. Good song, Skidmark. Now you got to do is give me some real, more contemporary homeless songs, or possibly record a few of your own. That man's been promising me songs for a long time. Ain't got no songs. Well, he's got this good album, this good CD, which was harassed by the Santa Cruz police. People, they tried to sell it for a free radio benefit and were arrested, ticketed, cited, moved along, all that kind of thing back in the 90s. And you can tell it's the 90s because they're talking about Sergeant Seeley. I believe, I don't know if Eric Seeley the Younger is now a sergeant. He may still be an officer. I think he probably still is. But that his father was a sergeant, and that's the, I believe, who Skidmark Bob is talking about when he asks Sergeant Seeley to remove the cuffs. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And again, the call-in number here is 427-3772.
It's about 10 to 1 on October 29th.
So, guys, I just helped put a sticker car here.
And I'm talking with
John Timms.
And, John, you came up to me with a concern, and you're on your way to the DA's office. What happened?
Well, I had my medical marijuana taken away from me, and I want to have it back because I'm a legal pot smoker, and I'm from Oregon.
Card.
And I'm from Oregon, and I don't think it's right for him to take my medicine.
And this was taken from you in the course of a drunken public arrest?
Yes, I was out in Scotts Valley trying to walk home, so I wasn't in town. And I got stopped blocks from my house, and no charges were filed, and they just took my medical marijuana.
You were jailed for drunk and then released without charges?
Right.
Now, were you unable to take care of yourself, and were you staggering in the middle of the road?
I was drunk. Yes, I was.
You were so drunk you couldn't make it home?
No.
Well, then they improperly arrested you. You're only supposed to be taken into custody if you are, not if you're drunk, but if you are actually unable to take care of yourself.
Well, I know I was not safe on the street being that drunk, and he did the right job getting me off the street.
Well, so you think it was good that you don't think you could have gotten home on your own?
Well, that remains to be seen walking down a dark street, but that, I got off the mall and got out of public, and then they got arrested in public intoxication when the whole thing was for me to go out to the where I wasn't in public.
So you actually, it sounds like you're not too certain that you should have, you would have made it by yourself, although you probably made it that far. I don't know whether you,
no.
But anyway.
Who can tell what would happen there?
Held in jail for how long?
It's 4 hours and released.
How did the deputies treat you?
Just fine, like always.
How did the Scotts Valley police treat you?
Just fine, but that's not the point. The point is, they can't be breaking the law and taking your medical marijuana.
What did they say to you when they took it?
They said nothing. They took it while I was incarcerated, and I didn't even sign the ticket.
Interesting. And so you're on your way to the DA to try to get your marijuana back and the charge dropped.
Exactly. To save, why not save both the taxpayers' money and me time and money coming down from Oregon for something which is ridiculous?
I wish you luck on that, John.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And, of course, that's been an issue I've raised a lot. Santa Cruz has a reputation for being liberal toward medical marijuana users and even having its own Measure K passed by the voters at the last election, which created a committee supposedly to oversee the police department and to make sure that the marijuana for all purposes, not just medical, but intoxication, experimentation, fun and games, you name it, recreation, was the lowest priority, at least as far as adults in private go. But that has not been the case. The measure was crippled after first being attacked by the city council and the city attorney even before it was passed. And then when the city council refused to put it on the ballot and the city council refused to endorse it, and then the city council declined for many months to appoint members to it after the voters passed it by a 64% majority. And then they took it to court and crippled it by trying to remove and successfully getting a settlement out of court to remove the provisions that actually required open access to certain police records, which the police didn't want to show them. Police jealously guard these prerogatives a little too jealously. It makes one fear that they are too interested in defending their own and not enough interested in holding themselves accountable. And that's a real problem with police departments, not just in Santa Cruz, but all over the country. So, the medical marijuana is a real issue, as well as the general drug war in Santa Cruz. And the ironic thing, of course, is that for years, there's been a majority, I'm sure, for legalization of marijuana, if not a bunch of other drugs, and treating them as medical problems and addiction problems rather than as police problems. And that whole thing has been sidelined by a conservative bureaucracy and police department, which is intent on not just enforcing bad state law and facilitating it. And remember, it's the state law that mostly causes the arrests. You know, you hear a lot about the feds going after Wham and so forth, and that's true. But in fact, that the percentage of the time that that happens are very rare compared to the number of arrests that happen all the time around ordinary recreational marijuana, and particularly of poor people who are really out there on the front lines. And I'm not saying anything most of you who listen to the show regularly haven't heard a number of times, but I say it for the benefit of people who haven't heard it, and also, again, to encourage and to embolden those of us who have heard it to do something about it. And I actually did have a word with Anita Henry the other day. Anita is a medical marijuana supplier. She's also a member of the Measure K committee. She was someone who was somewhat upset that the chair and the vice chair resigned because they realized this summer that the committee was a joke and couldn't do anything because first they're only allowed to meet twice a year, second they're not really allowed to look at police records and to perform their oversight function, and third, from my perspective, they're crippled by a staff, Tina Scholl, who is closely involved with the police department and other groups in the city government who are not sympathetic to the running of this, to the decriminalization of drugs, which is really what this is about, the decriminalization of marijuana, at least, taxing and regulating marijuana. This whole Measure K was supposed to be a precursor to a measure that didn't make the ballot this year that was going to be a state initiative to overturn the entire criminalization of marijuana. But the lobbies, apparently the police and the prison guards and the pharmaceutical industries and politicians are just too strong, and that's why I wonder if we just don't need a lot of people on the streets smoking or medicating or doing what, you know, the kind of protest that is necessary to shortcut this issue and stop the prison industrial complex from grinding on. It's a real question. So, you may have some answers. I obviously think I do, but answers alone from a lone voice on the radio don't mean diddly squat unless a lot of people get together and start acting on them and in their own individual ways, finding ways to just say no to the drug war, it's actually a war against people. You know, just say no to the foreclosures, just say no to the meaningless election candidates where you're going to get continued war, whether you vote for McCain or Obama, and focus again on the issues, which is what we really need to be focusing on, and we need to be shouting about, and we need to be taking action around. And I don't want to say, I guess I do want to say it's going to happen, because I kind of think it will. You know, I haven't gotten any sudden brilliant insight. I didn't have a flash of precognition, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just hopeful tonight. Anyway, I was able to get an interview with Bill Monig, as I mentioned earlier. He's a candidate for the Assembly, previously seat held by John Laird. For many people, Laird is a hero. I tend to give him short shrift. I don't think much of him, mainly because of his behavior in the past around issues of when he was mayor of Santa Cruz. He was the one who kind of pulled a Coonerty or a Rotkin way back in the 1988, shortening oral communication, changing it, making it more difficult for people to speak because he didn't like the kind of testimony he was getting from homeless people that exposed the bogus progressive pseudo-progressive label, the progressive label, but the unprogressive policies that the Santa Cruz City Council was following. Laird became an assemblyman and passed a number of good things for, you know, gay rights. And I guess he also did some work around LBAM, the light brown apple moth. And I tend to have a somewhat skewed perspective with respect to John, because in terms of police misconduct, in terms of decriminalizing sleeping, which he had the power to do at the state level by supporting 647, the repeal of 647J in the penal code, which is the law that a lot of the big cities use, and also our DA, Bob Lee, has used it to arrest people who are sleeping or camping outside, who have no alternative, but who still do that, still get arrested for it. He didn't do anything about that. And he also, of course, his action around the drug war, I've not found particularly commendable. I haven't heard of him, you know, spearheading that effort. I mean, he supports Wham, who doesn't, you know. Frankly, big fucking deal. I get criticized for criticizing Valerie and Mike Corral, who are nice people, you know, and who, in their own sphere, have, well, there's some controversy about how they've run their organization, and I've heard critics of that, too. But, you know, I support organizations that are trying to, collectives, cooperatives, and even non-collectives, non-cooperatives that are attempting to make marijuana either both medically accessible and accessible recreationally. I'm not a huge user of marijuana myself. I'm an occasional smoker, you know. But the idea of people being criminalized for this is just absurd. And it's something we are still, one feels like one's in the Middle Ages still, and it just goes on and on and on. There are some city council members who are talking about this issue. Craig Canada, who is a medical marijuana user who's been denied housing and denied shelter because he uses medical marijuana, even though he has a card, he has all the credentials, he has the medical conditions that require it, or that his doctor, at least, has stated, make it helpful for him to use. He's been barred from shelters. He's been denied access, and he's also been arrested. He's still facing trial. His medicine has been seized. We don't hear Tim Fitzmaurice or Mayor Coonerty or Don Lane or Catherine Byers or Tony Madrigal talking about this issue in any way. And to me, that's completely gutless, because this is an issue that needs to be discussed. And you have a bunch of politicians who don't want to talk about these sort of things because they don't... people who live in their houses, you know, they can go behind the doors and toke up without problems. People who are homeless are much more vulnerable. Anyway, Bill Monig is running for assembly. He's running for John Laird's assembly seat. He's a shoe-in. The Democrats are a shoe-in this year, which some people think is a great cause for celebration. I want to remind you all, the Democrats won in 2006. And they have not stopped the war, which they promised to do. And they backed this huge giveaway to Wall Street. I mean, we all know this, and yet everybody's going to troop up there. Many people are going to faithfully vote for these guys and gals, mostly guys. I tend to say, in order to avoid the controversy around the issue, because it's not really worth, I think, energy to fight with people who somehow have stars in their eyes and believe that Obama is going to change things. Whoever you vote for, be sure that you hold the new office holders accountable the day after the election. And don't wait, because people are dying overseas. People are being kicked out of their houses all over the country. People are being arrested in our city for using marijuana. And it's just grotesque that, you know, we should believe that somehow these liars who are putting into power should be worth any kind of respect whatsoever. Now, I talked to one of these guys today. I kind of like him, actually. I mean, I've talked to him before. He's, I think he ran in 1994 against McPherson, who was the editor of the Sentinel and then who was the winning Republican here in this district. And he's running again. Again, his name is Bill Monig. And you can judge for yourself. Again, I place very little stock in what politicians say. We'll see if Monig really wants to do anything about what he says he does want to do once he gets elected. We'll see whether he takes calls from people in Santa Cruz who want him to hold the city council to the constitution of the state and the federal government as far as homeless people goes. But I'm not holding my breath. Nonetheless, who knows? And so here's this interview, which I promised, and it runs about 20, 25 minutes. So check out Bill Monig, the likely next assembly person for our district. The assembly is the lower house, the sort of the people's house, although these seats don't usually turn over. They're decided in the primaries, and they're decided by money, and they're decided between two parties whose differences, you know, are between, centrist right and extreme right, so it's pretty bad. But, that varies, obviously, from a district to district, but here's Bill Monig, and check him out.
So it's October 30th, about 10 o'clock. We're waiting for the call from Bill Monig for an interview on a number of issues. He's running for state assembly.
Okay, well, we'll see how it goes. Might be out of there before 20 minutes. Never can tell.
Great. Well, whatever works for you. But I've got to be at something at 10:30. So.
Okay, sounds good. All right, well, I'll introduce you for our radio show. We're playing this interview tonight on Free Radio, 101.1 FM. We've got here potential, or probably likely, assembly victor, Bill Monig. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Robert. How you doing today?
I'm okay, and I'm glad the phone is working. I was having trouble with it earlier. This is your, second, third run for assembly? How many times have you run before?
I ran once before for this seat in 1994 when Bruce McPherson was the incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
94 was not a good year for Democrats. We had a photo finish out of 140,000 votes cast. We had about a 1,400 vote margin.
Hmm. And do you have much opposition this time?
No, our big race was, I believe, the primary contest where there were three other strong candidates. There is a Republican out of Morgan Hill and a Libertarian out of Morgan Hill and a write-in candidate out of Monterey. But none of those candidates seem to be running high-visibility campaigns, but we're not taking anything for granted. I'm doing my precinct work, and we're reaching out to as many voters as possible.
The subjects I'm interested in, as you probably know from the conversations, the brief ones we've had in the past, have to do with civil rights for poor people, particularly homeless people.
Yes, uh-huh.
And this is a problem in a lot of local jurisdictions. I imagine you're in Monterey County yourself, right?
That's correct.
I'm in Santa Cruz County, but Monterey County has a similar record of treating homeless people rather wretchedly who are outside. Trying to either, not even to ignore them, but to criminalize them. And that is an issue that could be addressed at the state level. And as an assembly person, you would have some power around that. Naturally, we're all concerned with getting people out of homelessness and creating affordable housing and, providing adequate medical services. And these are all very important things. But while all this is being done, people try to make do themselves by surviving as best they can. And there's a matrix of anti-camping ordinances that sort of crisscrosses the state and in each county that essentially gives police vast selective enforcement powers to go after the poor and to criminalize them. What would you do about this, if anything, or is this an issue that you have some interest in?
Well, it's an issue that I absolutely have interest in, and let me just start by saying I'm aware of your work and others in the homeless community who have showing great courage and standing up when the odds have not been in their favor, and I know many, it hasn't been by choice, it's been reacting to police force and community regulations. A couple of comments. First, just generally, when there's some of these philosophical sayings of, you know, we measure the goodness of our society by looking at the condition of people in our prisons, or who was the French philosopher who said, you know, law applies equally to
Anatole France, you know, that
yeah,
about the people have the right to, yeah, to beg in the streets, sleep under bridges, and
that's right. So, you know, those are some of the thoughts that come to mind, just as kind of background of how we orient to people that are at the bottom of the economic ladder and, you know, living day to day, meal to meal, night to night. So the question becomes, what is the appropriate role for our communities, local governments, county governments, and state governments to address the issue of homelessness? And, you know, different communities approach it in different ways. I don't pretend to know all the ins and outs of the struggles that have taken place in Santa Cruz, although I do have some knowledge of that, and again, in large measure because of your work and others who have stood up for the rights of people that often don't have a voice. So I think in the short run, assuming that we're not going to have a rapid turnaround in the economic status of our state. In fact, it's going from bad to worse, and more people through foreclosures and being at the low end of the economic pecking order are facing homelessness through no choice of their own. We also have the spectrum among homelessness of people who don't have adequate access or sometimes no access to health care services, which further exacerbates the destitute nature of a day-to-day existence. So having said all of that in terms of the context, instead of the context, I've got a meter maid telling me I've got to feed the meter here.
Go feed the meter.
Well, I think she just went around the corner, so actually I'm going to take off my headset. We're going to keep talking, and I'm just going to put a quarter in the meter, so she goes away. So in terms of addressing how do we create, I think one of the challenges is just to create a more compassionate attitude for people who are homeless, usually through no voluntary choice of their own. It's a combination of forces that happen in people's lives, whether it's loss of a job, illness, loss of a family member, mental illness, whatever the issues might be. So as communities then, how do we develop a compassionate and caring response to people who are often also very strong contributors to our communities in various ways, whether it's through the arts or other forms of contribution?
Bill, let me interrupt you.
I know some of the struggles that have gone on here in the city of Santa Cruz, right, of ordinances trying to outlaw and ban you know, homeless folks sleeping,
right,
overnight in community areas. I mean, communities have to, if we have homeless, we can't ignore them. And so I would think at the local level, it's critical to create designated areas in dialogue with homeless community and homeless community representatives that that accommodates and provides options for people who are struggling. At the state level, I think we have to look at some of the bigger pictures you alluded to, Robert, including economic reform, healthcare reform, you know, just looking at the issue of healthcare and access to health services, too often, not just homeless, but other members of our community who don't have healthcare provided for them end up accessing emergency rooms when that's the most expensive way to provide healthcare services, and it's not necessarily the most comprehensive way to provide.
Yeah, let me interrupt you, Bill, because I agree with you all on all that. In fact, the people who are criminalizing homeless people, like Mayor Coonerty, who will be hosting you at a reception and with Tom Hayden tonight, will also agree with probably with both of us on that issue. But where the rubber meets the road is that these local mayors and politicians support laws that repress the homeless based on theories that the visible presence of homeless people is bad for business, or the sort of like the bogus war on terror being pursued abroad. There's a sort of a local war on, you know, the appearance of poverty, because it's a sad reminder to us all, and it's also kind of frightening, and it's easy to scapegoat people who are poor. But in Santa Cruz, for example, they say we have a mayor who will be supporting you, but who supports the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. Are you prepared to stand up to that mayor and other mayors around the state and say, look, I disagree with you on this issue, and I will maybe put forward legislation that will not allow communities to criminalize homeless people? If they have no legal place to sleep, they have to be allowed to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. That's a hard question for you because, you know, it talks about just disagreeing with possible allies or real allies. So.
Yeah, well, I think the essence of your question is, am I willing to go counter to what some local governments may be doing or local elected leaders? Let me say this, Robert. I'm willing at the state level to explore methods that the state can help promote a more compassionate approach to dealing with the homeless. I think at the core, local communities are the ones that are... is where the rubber meets the road. It is local governments, it's local business owners, it's local chambers, it's local law enforcement. These are the people with the power in local communities who are going to be addressing solutions that may appear to be solutions to them and may not be appear to be fair or compassionate solutions for the homeless. So I think one thing that a person in my position could do is to commit to convene principled and structured dialogue. The key is to give voice to the voiceless and to give respect where often respect has not been afforded, and that members of our homeless community are members of our community. So how do we create constructive dialogue that leads to solutions that the various stakeholders, including the homeless, have some voice in?
I'm going to interrupt this. This is Bill Monag talking to me on the phone earlier today. I'm trying to let Bill and speak for himself. However, this is such a pretty clear dodge that I want to really point it out. Now, Bill has not been a guy who has been, you know, fully educated on the issue by homeless groups, but he knows about it, and what you'll hear later, us talking more about it. And is he saying he's willing to use state power on this issue, as, for example, he could do? He could pass a law preempting all local camping ordinances, saying that if there's no shelter, what the Ninth Circuit Court's ruling in the Jones case would be made the law in California. You cannot do it. You cannot criminalize people, and that would preempt local ordinances, I imagine. But we don't get that. Instead, we get this kind of, frankly, the Simba Kenyatta kind of talk about dialogue. We're going to be a lot of dialogue. We're all going to sit down and talk about all this. Well, we don't need talk. We need somebody that's going to call the police off people who are sleeping, call the police off people who are using public spaces legally, but they don't like the way they look. We need someone who's going to do something around this issue. Now, or at least is going to advocate for doing something, even if he or she can't get a majority in the assembly, which has 80 people and you got to get 41 votes, or at least a majority, I think, of those who are voting. So I don't think much of this dialogue idea. I understand it's a way of saying perhaps I don't know much about the issue yet, but if you educate me more. But of course, I don't know. He is saying dialogue. Somewhat similar to what, as I said, City Council candidate Simba Kenyatta says about, let's all sit down and talk. Well, in Simba's case, I had said, you don't talk until you have some power. What you want to do there is organize locally to get the power. And that's what I urged Simba to do 2 years ago when he was running for City Council then. And I said, I'll be more impressed with what he does the day after he loses the race than I would for anything he says before the race, you know, comes to a vote. And of course, the day after he lost, the so-called beyond politics, it was a beyond vision. It disappeared out of sight for about a year and a half until this new community dialogue situation came up. The judgment isn't in on the community dialogue against racism, poverty, injustice, and so forth, which is still, you know, trying to come up with some proposals and do something concrete. And indeed, the cop watch that's happening tomorrow night at Pacific and Cathcart, and you're welcome to come join us in front of 1010 Pacific on the corner there to do some cop watching at 9 o'clock tomorrow night, assuming it's not raining cats and dogs. We'll see what happens. I think some of the folks from that law enforcement subcommittee were interested. Maybe they'll show up. It could be. Again, let's get back to Bill Monig and his thoughts on this issue. I've made my lengthy interruption, and I'll try to allow Bill to say a little more before I interrupt again.
You know, I'm the first to acknowledge that there are not, that these are complex problems, there are not easy solutions. I'd be curious to hear what you think would be the reforms that could address either here at the local level or at the statewide level, a better approach to dealing with homeless communities.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, I'd be happy. That's one another issue I'd like to talk to you about is accessibility, how accessible you think you could be to meet regularly with local groups concerned with these civil liberties issues, but nonetheless don't have funds to contribute or a lot of prestige in their reputations. For instance, our local ACLU in Santa Cruz won't even come out against a law that you opposed 10 years ago publicly. We asked you for your endorsement in the sleeping ban initiative that would end the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, at least in some areas of the city, and you endorsed that initiative back in the 90s. But the local ACLU wouldn't do it and has refused to come out with a position, even though other ACLUs throughout the state, well, been instrumental in court decisions like down in Los Angeles that overturned the laws that make it criminal for people to sleep on the streets. What can you do? I would suggest, you know, there's a 647J state law used by San Diego police, used by San Francisco police, used by Sacramento police. It's called the anti-lodging law that is essentially a sleeping ban that is used in instances in the counties where there are no city ordinances that would criminalize people. It's a law that has been made the lowest enforcement priority in Berkeley because it was used so frequently and to such evil effect. But that only affected the Berkeley Police Department. You could make a statewide effort, as has been made in the past, to change that. You're probably aware of the Copley decision down in San Diego, which makes it impossible to access police department disciplinary records even after decisions have been made and other administrative, and it's a million amount of administrative appeal, essentially crippling citizen police review boards throughout the state. You could work to oppose that, and I think that's a pretty standard liberal position. I mean, support a law that would change that decision. There are two things you could do. A third is you could work on some kind of state equivalent to the Bringing Home America Act pushed by Dennis Kucinich back nationally, which would essentially cut off funding to cities that insist on criminalizing homeless people who have no access to shelter. I mean, there's a declared shelter emergency throughout the state. But this is supposed to be your interview, not mine, so I'm going to shut up and let you give your reaction to these.
Well, this is helpful, and I intentionally asked you for your thoughts on this because one of the things you said before sharing some of that information with me is a question is about availability and access to people who haven't necessarily contributed to my campaign. One of my issues for a long time, either as a candidate or as just a reform advocate, has been for fundamental campaign finance reform because I believe our system has been skewed by big money interests, if not outright dominated by big money interests. I'm running to be available to all constituents, whether they voted for me or not, whether they make contributions or not, whether they're Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green, Libertarian. Should the voters choose to send me to Sacramento on November 4th, at least half of the commitment of my work is not just to the work I do in Sacramento, it's to the work I do in the districts, and that means being available to constituents, it means providing constituent services. And to me, that's across the board. It's not a gateway that's controlled by who made a contribution or not. It's a gateway that's controlled by who lives in this region. And I will set up times to meet with as you describe, advocates for civil rights and civil liberties. And that's what's marked my professional work. It's been representing those without voice, whether it was with the United Farm Workers Union or more recently with the Civil Rights Coalition of Monterey County, where we've worked to get put in place as a Monterey County ordinance a required training for crisis intervention team workers from behavioral health to be engaged when police come to a situation where a so-called suspect presents with any aberrant sign interpreted as being mental illness.
I remember they were shooting him in Salinas and Monterey, as I recall. I remember we did some work on that. Let me skip quickly, as I know you haven't got much time. What about changing the Ellis Act and vacancy decontrol so rent control can have a chance in some cities again?
Yeah, again, I'm glad to be educated on that. I don't pretend to have expertise. The Ellis Act does.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're happy to educate you insofar as I'm educated, which is not terribly far. What about in Monterey County itself? You've been, you know, it's 1994 to 2008 is 14 years. What have you done in the last 14 years that might encourage people, you've already mentioned a few things, who are poor and homeless to think that you're not going to get lost in the Sacramento mob, where, you know, seats rarely turn over. Assembly seats are sort of like, it's like, you know, they're bought and sold, and it's essentially a money-making activity. You've already mentioned a couple things, you know, cutting public funding of elections and accessibility. But what have you done specifically, and not as a politician, in the last 14 years that we can look back to be reassured by?
Well, I would allude again to the work with the Civil Rights Coalition. That's been non-compensated volunteer work to pull together leaders of various communities, primarily minority community leaders. And some of the work we've done, I would say, indirectly addresses homeless issues, because often the people targeted by certain police practices also happen to be homeless. But we focused more on trying to create protocols by which police get trained and behavioral health people get trained to approach people that are in the past treated as criminal suspects to be treated as people who may be presenting with a mental health issue, and the appropriate solution is not a gunshot or multiple tasering that can lead to death.
What about tasering? Do you favor?
As a result, we've created a greater vigilance, I think, by all police departments within Monterey County, that you don't shoot first and ask questions later, and that there's different ways to engage people who may come into contact with law enforcement.
Again, you're listening to Bill Monag earlier today being interviewed by me. I'm interrupting this because I realized I should have made this announcement earlier. There are two events happening tonight that are kind of quintessential hypocrisy in Santa Cruz politics I want to bring your attention to, because you can actually go to them if you want. One of them started at 7 o'clock. I think it's free. It's at 99 Bottles of Beer, and it is a showing of the Freedom Files by the Santa Cruz chapter of the ACLU. It's described as follows. Santa Cruz chapter of the ACLU is hosting this evening gathering to allow community members to get together, learn about our government's policies and practices regarding torture, and discuss among ourselves what this means to us. It's at 99 Bottles of Beer in a private room with a big TV, free appetizers, and a video that started about 15 minutes ago. And it's being hosted by none other than Mike Rotkin, who is a city council member, as well as a former mayor. I think he's a four-time former mayor. And he's also, of course, an instructor up at UCSC, and he's on the board of directors of the ACLU. And more important, he has been a person who has repeatedly supported cutbacks in public comment. He cut them back himself, public comment, when he was mayor, and he supported Mayor Coonerty's cutback in public comment recently. He supported making the parking garages forbidden zones, although he did dissent from expanding that to all the parking lots, as Mayor Coonerty wanted to do. He tried to have me arrested for walking into the last ACLU meeting a year ago with a sign about the sleeping ban, and he actually called the police on me. The police refused to arrest me, pointing out it was a public meeting. The irony of a member of the board of directors of the ACLU trying to arrest a member of the public for carrying a sign into an ACLU meeting is really quite stark. Although, of course, no media picked it up, and I'm the one who's been talking about it for the last year. So Mike Rotkin is going to be there talking about the civil liberties from the ACLU. This is the group that refuses to give a position on the sleeping ban, refuses to give a position on the conduct, how prisoners are treated in local jails here. It doesn't give a position on the downtown ordinances that criminalize people for being in public spaces. It won't take a position locally on the drug war. So it's like a fundraising machine that raises funds for national issues. Again, I remind you that the National Drug Policy Center, the ACLU, is here in Santa Cruz for the entire country. It's on the second or third floor of the building right above Taqueria Vallarta at Cathcart and Pacific. It takes up many offices. And I actually did get a call back. I want to give full acknowledgement from Adam Wolf, who is an active attorney with the ACLU, who tried to explain away, along with Ben Rice, why the Measure K gutting had to happen. He did that before the Measure K Commission last November. And so that event is happening at started at 7 o'clock. Check it out, 99 Bottles. The second event is happening at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and I'll be talking about that in a moment. Let's see here. Hi, we have a caller on the line, I think. Hi there, caller.
Hi, Robert. Madison.
Hi, Madison. You've been listening? Or
yeah,
is this
I'm running for president, but they're trying to block all my emails.
Okay, I want you to talk about what we're talking about
Monig,
right now.
Oh, Monig, the misogynist Monig. Forget it. I've never seen this man once in any city I've ever lived in, at any arts event, and I'm at all of them, all over the South Bay, Carmel, Monterey, San Jose, Morgan Hill, you name it. That sucker has never been at one arts event. I've never seen him at any homeless events. I've never seen him at any crime event whatsoever. And what I can feel from this guy, five wallets back, it's dirty money. And I think that Monig ought to hit the trail. Mm. I think he's just a phony blowhard. And I tried to speak with him, and he completely ignored me because I have boobies. Oh,
well,
yeah, the guy is an utter misogynist, and any woman out there, just forget this guy and vote the other side.
Well, remember, that you, Madison, you're a particularly outspoken individual. Some may regard you as a wingnut.
No. I scored off the map on the ACT. There were only four kids that scored as high as I did.
Well, I understand.
And I can tell you, Monty is not one of them.
But, Madison, there's some who still, and even I on occasion, tend to view, not because you're a woman, but because of the content of what you say, that, you know, you're...
No, this man totally ignored me. I hadn't even opened my mouth. I had to say, excuse me, sir, can you speak with me? My family happened to have founded the Coastal Commission.
Right. Well, again, I don't really care. He probably doesn't either.
Well, you know, we don't care either. As voters in Santa Cruz, if you guys back what I do in this town, you guys do not send any money or vote for this guy, Monig. Forget it.
Okay.
Get him out. When in doubt, chuck him out. We two terms, start voting the other side, vote the other person, get rid of him. We need to, you know what I'm saying?
Well, let me
he's
ask
been
you
in
this,
too
Madison,
long, and he's
Madison,
a fat cat.
Oh, Madison, are you attending the ACLU thing with the Rotkin tonight?
Oh, those guys, yeah. Well, I got tortured in the Santa Cruz jail, and I called to make complaints down there, and it's crawling with Blackwater agents.
So, Madison, are you prepared to take your show on the road down
to 99
Bottles? I already
did. I turned it all into the attorney general.
No. Are you going to go down there and talk to people who are actually there tonight?
No, I'd rather go top down. Are you kidding? No, I'm not dealing with the little peons.
Fair enough. Well, thank you. Let me continue.
And wait a minute. I suspect there's a number of people. I was tortured in this jail, drug out of my home in the middle of the night when I was sleeping by the police department and tortured in that damn jail. And anybody else has been bothered out there, get up and say something.
Hold it. What were you arrested for?
Hell if I know.
No. What were you charged with?
I don't honestly recall at this point.
Well,
something about peace
that
I was... No. I was beat up by Butchie Baker and this other guy, and I had bruises, and I have post-traumatic stress from it. And
what year? When was this?
A couple years ago. Oh, I'll tell you what the problem was. I stood up against their stupid drug program. And everybody in Salinas or anywhere else if you're listening, they're selling to both sides. Watch your kids.
Were you convicted of a crime afterward?
I pleaded no contest because they couldn't. I was denied my rights and an attorney, and I didn't have the money and all this stuff.
What were you charged with?
I forget. It was some little misdemeanor thing and whatever. So, you know, I just went and did it, their little game and whatever.
Okay.
This is the most drug-ridden.
Thank you, Madison. The problem with this kind of account is unless we know the whole situation, you sound like someone who's sour grapes.
They filmed the whole thing, the sheriffs, and they're using it for S&M videos. They're selling on the frickin' Internet.
Well, you should demand at least a percentage from that.
Oh, I am. I am. And anyone else out there?
Thank you, Madison. I'm going to go.
Okay. Bye, Monica.
And by Madison. Thank you for calling in. 427-3772. I'll have to say this for Madison. At least she calls in. That is more than I can say for the rest of you out there. Anyway, the second incident happening tonight, the second meeting happening tonight was actually advertised on ndbay.org, but apparently it's not there anymore. It has to do with a fundraiser for the very same Bill Monig, happening at the Bookshop Santa Cruz at 7:30, where Tom Hayden is appearing. This is Coonerty's Bookshop. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on free radio.
Robert.
Yes.
What's happening?
Well, I don't know. You're on the air, so you can tell us what's happening.
Okay, so what's happening is we got the sample ballot here.
Uh-huh.
And we can go through this if you want to, or we can continue to talk about Bill Monig, who, for once, I actually happen to agree with Madison. The guy is basically a windbag.
Uh-huh, okay. Well, you know, it was hard to get him to... he didn't seem too knowledgeable on the issues I was talking about. He did seem to be less evasive than, let's say, Tony Madrigal or Ryan Coonerty, but that's not saying much, is it?
No, it's not saying much at all.
Are you going to be going down to the Bookshop Santa Cruz to...
No.
Well, what about to 99 Bottles of Beer to talk to Mike Rotkin?
No, I'm going to the Bocce Cellar to see Groovy Judy.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. You're just a musical madman.
Judy is Jimmy's sister, so any of you out there like Jimi Hendrix should go check Groovy Judy out.
You know, what I would like to do, Scott, I would like to hear your thoughts on the propositions. In fact, you know, I didn't...
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk to you about.
Right, which I'd like to hear, but I really should finish up this interview.
Oh, come on, Robert.
It's
Robert, wait a second. Let me tell you something here.
Well, you better tell me that. You were going to
play this thing. You took 20 minutes of lead-in time talking about the tape before you dropped the tape in the machine.
I know. But
then
when
you put the tape in the machine, he wasn't even on yet. You were talking about him. Oh, the tape on the
Scott,
tape.
Scott, you're
stuff.
A persistent.
Wait a minute. On the tape is stuff about
you're
him
a persistent,
possibly calling.
You're a persistent.
Come on, dude. Why don't you at least cue the tape to where you start talking to him instead of you talking about possibly talking to him.
We need you as a producer here, Scott. I can see that.
Yeah,
I can
come
see
on,
that.
Robert. You spent a half an hour doing lead-in to the tape, and then you
Scott, I'd love to have your
tape,
commentary.
And now you
can I get
talk
you?
To me about something
I do want to talk to you about it. Can you give me?
Yeah.
Can you call me back in 5 minutes? It'll be over in 5 minutes. I just don't want to have it separated by an entire segment from you, which I think is important. So
whatever, Robert.
Call me back in 5.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. And let's hear the rest of the Bill Monig interview, and then perhaps Scott will call back with his analysis of the propositions, which I think is, you know, it's something you can actually vote on. You can vote on Monig, too, but you don't really have a choice. Monig is going to win. I guess you have a choice of whether to, you know, I don't know, burn down the assembly or something like that, to take some more dramatic action. I'd like to see people sitting in Farr's office until the war ends, but... maybe the only one who is willing to do that, provided somebody is willing to do it with me. Call me if you are, 427-3772. Anyway, here's the rest of the Monig interview, and then hopefully we'll hear from Scope It Out Scott Graham again.
Any objections generally to tasering? I know some of us have been concerned that this is simply a form of curbside justice or curbside punishment, and also it has a very lethal aspect to it.
Well, I've served as the general counsel to the NAACP branch of Monterey County, and the NAACP nationally is on record as opposing the use of taser guns at any time under any circumstances. I think they're inherently unsafe, and I know law enforcement thinks they provide an alternative to lethal force, but we've documented over 150 deaths caused by taser around the country, so it is a lethal weapon, and it is not really a choice to the use of lethal force, because if an officer makes a decision that his life is threatened, he's instructed to use his or her gun, not a taser. A taser is used for behavior modification, and it's been misused and abused where they've used it on people who are already handcuffed, they've used it on elderly, they've used it on young, and they've used multiple blasts, which is what usually results in cardiac arrest. This is where the taser is becoming the default weapon as opposed to talking to a suspect, as opposed to exploring alternatives or using non-lethal force. when there's a threat to the physical safety of an officer. So, you know, I'm on record as somebody who is counsel with an organization that is opposed to the use of taser anytime, anywhere.
What is your primary passion, the main issues you think you're really going to be pursuing? I take it it's around healthcare, perhaps, or...
Well, healthcare is one. My personal interest is to promote more training in K-12 in basic negotiation, mediation, peer mediation, and giving more voice and training to students to resolve their own problems in schoolyards, with families, within communities. That these are life skills, and that they can be taught. And that we need to create a new culture of mediation that's rooted in respect, that's rooted in learning about cross-cultural communication, cross-class communication. And I'll be exploring in my first months in Sacramento what is happening in other districts around the state. I know the state of Ohio has a particularly well-developed peer mediation program in the schools. It's cut down on truancy, it's cut down on expulsions and suspension, and they let the kids who have been trained serve as peer mediators, where the kids become co-architects in working out a solution to their problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a model that I want to promote in education. It's also a model that I think we need to expand into our communities.
Now, on another subject, and it sounds like you probably got to get going because you got a 10:30 meeting, but psychiatric forced medication and the huge explosion in prescribed medications for young people has been an issue that's come up often on this station, well, a number of times anyway, and it's a concern of a lot of us that there's increased pressure to scapegoat people who are labeled mentally ill, force them to take medications that often lead to taking more medications because of side effects, whereas the actual results of that medication, according to a number of authorities, are often people are better using other kinds of methods or at least having the options. But there's an increased pressure. SB 420 was recently passed, for example. I believe it's 41421, actually, which, 420 is the another bill, which said that it gives counties the power to forcibly medicate people, issue court orders, go after them in their homes, and so forth. And the only thing that's stopping that now is funding. And, of course, we're in a funding crisis, so that may be enough. But I'm wondering, do you have any concerns around the issues of people who are being forcibly drugged and incarcerated? Or are you more of the opinion that, you know, gee, these are poor people who don't know how to take care of themselves, don't know what they're doing, and best to leave it to a psychiatric authority?
Well,
or do you have a mixed view?
It's certainly not the latter. I'm opposed to anybody being forced to take any medication against their will. I know there are provisions for 72-hour detentions for people that pose a risk for themselves or others, but they are entitled to a Petras hearing where there has to be an advocate on behalf of that person who makes the case for their ability to reclaim their freedom. You know, we live in a culture, Robert, that's so drug dependent. Our whole healthcare system, and I'm not just talking about these psychiatric medications. I'm talking about a highly drug dependent culture and a medical system that's a fix-it approach using prescription medicines, and it's not a healthy system. And one aspect of that unhealthy healthcare system is the reliance on psychiatric drugs, for example. You mentioned among children in school who present hyperactive tendencies, you know, the use of Ritalin and the overuse of Ritalin. Now, having said all of that, I'm sure there are situations and data that would show certain people with the support of appropriately prescribed medications can reclaim a more functioning and a more vital life that is made possible because of the advent of certain breakthroughs in the technology of psychiatric drugs. So I do want to put that front and center. Having said that, it's the strong arming of the state or of people subjecting people to whatever the regimen is of medication, incarceration control, and do we have in place a sufficient advocacy system to make sure people who have no voice, who have no money, who can't hire a lawyer, are not going to get swept under the rug or force-fed drugs that are designed to pacify as opposed to help address either a mental health or another health problem.
And quickly, the big issue, of course, for a lot of us is the huge increase in arrests under the drug prohibition war, similar to what they were doing with alcohol in the 30s or in the 20s. You have criminalization of people in a huge industry based on drugs being made illegal instead of behavior being punished, which is criminal. This is a big issue to tackle, and you have huge lobbies to deal with. How do you feel about legalizing or medicalizing drugs so they can be dealt with that way instead of through the criminal and penal system?
Well, the war on drugs is a total failure, and we've created a drug industrial complex or war on drugs industrial complex, just like our military industrial complex and the prison industrial complex. There's a lot of people right now making millions of dollars with the status quo of a system that has criminalized all drugs. I favor decriminalization. I favor investing in treatment options for people who suffer from addiction. And I favor decriminalization and, in some cases, legalization for adults on their own time, in their own place, and not hurting anybody else. If we put a tax on certain legalized drug products, we could put more money into health care, more money into education and treatment, and put the military dollars of the drug war into a health care system that could help people to develop wholesome, healthy lives that hopefully wouldn't involve drug addiction or drug dependence.
That's what I wanted to hear. Now I want to see some action.
Good. Well, that's the challenge. You know, I tell people all I can do is my best. I don't have a magic wand. Probably the first hearings I'm going to be in, should the voters elect me on November the 4th, we may be convened as early as December to do more budget cutting because of the gap in revenues and cost, the refusal of the Republicans to agree to any increased taxes anywhere, anytime. So we've got growing costs, growing expenses in education and health care, and we've got the tyranny of the minority in Sacramento who have signed a contractual pledge never to raise taxes. So, as you know, we've got to decide, is that the best way to make a budget? And if not, how do we reform that budget process so the will of the people can be manifest in paying what's necessary to invest in education at the front end instead of incarceration at the back end?
How can people reach you if they want to comment on anything they've heard, ask you further questions, or demand action?
Good. My office number in Santa Cruz is 421-0339.
Mm-hmm.
My email is info at billmonning.org. And I read that regularly.
And how do you spell Monning?
M-O-N-N-I-N-G.
So it's info at billmonning.org and 421-0339, area code 831.
That's correct.
Anything you want to say in conclusion, or do you just want to get rolling?
Well, I need to get rolling, but I do want to thank you, Robert, for this opportunity and your listeners for the opportunity to address some of these questions. A half hour is not a lot of time, but maybe it's a start, and I do look forward to opportunities to get better educated myself and better acquainted with the community in Santa Cruz that's been working on these issues for so many years.
If you're listening, we want to talk to you.
Great. Thanks so much, Robert.
Thanks, Bill.
And that was Bill Monig talking to me earlier today. He's the likely assembly victor in a week. And, you know, of course, all these statements, he seems to be against psychiatric over-medicating or psychiatric forced drugging. He seems to be against the drug war. He talks about being in favor of homeless civil rights, and that's nice, but the question is, what specifically is he willing to do? What is he willing to advocate for? And I got to point out that Monig didn't come to our meetings. He didn't. He hasn't contacted Huff, though. Huff has been around since 1994 when he ran for office before. I've kind of heard of him as a kind of a vaguely more leftist politician than a better bet than the other ones in the Democratic Party. But that's the Democratic Party there. That's the war party, you know. That's the one that voted unanimously to brand Iran terrorist at the state level. That was John Laird, who voted to withdraw funds from investment from Iran from the state employees fund. We have a call. Could this be Scott Graham? Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Free Radio?
We are Free Radio, but you can donate if you'd like. We need money. Give us some money to go to freakradio.org to give us your checks. However, I think that's probably not your purpose in calling in there. So what you have some stuff you want to bring to our attention about the upcoming ballot?
Proposition. Basically, the initiatives. I mean, you want to start with the one in the city, or do you want to go for the state ones?
Start wherever you'd like. I'm happy that you're
okay. Well, Measure E is a city ballot initiative, and what it is it's a property tax increase. And so all you renters out there, if this thing passes, your landlord, even though it may only be a $28 property tax increase, will use this opportunity to increase your rent by at least $100, because they're going to pass along this tax to you. And even though it's only $28, it'll be turned into $100, maybe even $200 by some landlords, you know. But what it is it's the city is under a mandate from the state and the feds to not be dumping the runoff from the streets into the ocean full of oil and other contaminants. Well, back in the 90s, they had a similar thing. They put this tax measure on the ballot. It's called the Stormwater Fund. And they haven't done anything to clean the stormwater. Not a penny of that money was spent cleaning the stormwater. And so now they want us citizens to vote to tax us ourselves again to do the same thing that we voted to tax ourselves to do back in 94, I believe it was.
Now, do the proponents or the opponents of this measure make this point? I know that in the ballot measure argument that they write up.
Yes. The head of the local Sierra Club is the one that writes the argument against it. So if the Sierra Club's against this measure, then it must be a phony environmental thing, you know. That's all I got to say. I mean, it's
I'm not looking at the ballot. What about the those who support it? Who supports it?
Who supports it? Let me see where. Dan Heffley, Mary Silver, Lori Coffey.
What organizations support it?
Some guy from that owns a business on the wharf, director of Coastal Watershed Council, executive director of Save Our Shores, Save Our Shores is supposedly one of these feel-good organizations that's there to watch our coastline, but they take money from Canfield, Ocean Chevrolet, from the Budweiser distributor. They have their hand out constantly to anybody, and so it's like, can you really, then O'Neill's Sea Odyssey, which is, it's a for-profit adventure cruise out on the ocean, Joseph Marini, president of Marini's at the Beach, a candy store down on the wharf, of course these people... They don't care. Most of them live outside the city, so they don't care if the people in the city get taxed on this,
Why would they bother to support it, though?
Why? Because they think it's a good. They believe the city, you know. Plus, they're probably being told by people like Rockin and Coonerty that, you know, if you support us on this, we'll support you and your businesses on other things, you know.
So we're talking about measure. What measure is this again?
Measure E.
Now, that's the only measure that the city voters are going to
be. That's the only one in the city. Now, there's some measures out there in the county. You know, there's a county one, a Watsonville one, and a Capitola one for the 911 tax, which also happened as a mail-in measure here in the city.
That was defeated.
It failed miserably.
Right.
Because people are starting to get sick of this crap. Every election, the politicians have all this stuff on there of raising our taxes because they're supposedly broke. They don't have any money. But then they're going out and doing these harebrained projects. Like right across the street from where I live is a park. They tore out the playground. It's about the fifth time they've torn out the playground there, and they're putting in a new playground.
This is Laurel Park?
Yes, and it's like they're going to do this all over the city. Now, for a city that has no money to spend, you know, $250,000 on every park to replace the playgrounds when kids are already using the equipment that's there and there's nothing wrong with it, now, I could see if the stuff was all busted up that you'd want to replace it. But to just come in and rip out a playground and put a whole new playground in, you know, for the fifth time since the city's owned this property, it's, like, ridiculous.
Now, where's the documentation that's from the fifth time? I mean, I recall this happening maybe once before.
When the city took over the property, Robert.
When was that?
In the 80s. There was already a playground there because it was an elementary school.
Okay.
They immediately ripped all that stuff out. That was one of the first things they did.
And you know because you live right across the street.
Well, at that time I didn't. At that time I lived over on Chestnut Street, a block away.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I mean, they completely redid the whole back of the place.
So it's been redone at least twice, but you say five times, though.
Well, then they put in the stuff they put in then. Someone decided it was unsafe, so then they ripped it out and they put in these wooden structures. Well, all the wood stuff they put in there was pressure treated lumber that had arsenic in it. And when the studies came out later that this pressure treated wood was really bad for people, and the company that was making the pressure treated wood got sued so many times that they had to go out of business. Then it was decided to rip the stuff out and put in a new playground, you know? And so here we are again.
So that's three or four times, not five times. We're trying to get the exaggerations down, Graham.
I'm sure there was another one thrown in there. But the thing is, Robert, this is just one park, okay? There's a dozen parks in the city. They're going to do it to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
At $250,000 a pop or more, there's always cost overruns, as you know, with the police department.
Well, I remember the bathrooms out at the Lighthouse Field Park.
And, you know, the cost overruns can sometimes double the price of a project.
But they won't put in bathrooms downtown that are 24-hour bathrooms. I mean, it's just amazing.
No, but that's why you got to vote for Craig Canada, so you can shit anywhere you want to downtown.
Well, that's... I think Craig actually is probably one of the better candidates. Are you going to vote for Craig Canada there?
I might, you know, but anyway.
Yes.
Get back to this. You know, for a city that claims they have no money to be doing this ridiculous playground project at a time when the economy is so bad, it's just their argument that they have no money is ridiculous.
So you think that they will misuse the stormwater money?
They never used the stormwater money that they got from the first round.
Do they respond to that criticism at all when it's made by the opponents?
Huh?
Do they respond? The ballot, for those who don't know, has kind of pro and con arguments. You say that criticism that they didn't use the money that was passed originally in the 90s for this cleanup purpose. Do the people who want to give more money now or get more money respond to that criticism? They say, well, we didn't use it because A, B, and C.
No, they do not respond to the to that part of the argument. Well, there's, you know, a couple of parts of the argument that they do not respond to, and that's one of them, where the argument is that they had already gotten this money back in the 90s and never used it to clean up the stormwater.
Scott, we only have about 10 minutes.
Okay. But then
wait a minute. We only have 10 minutes, so I'm going to invite you to actually come in the studio on Sunday.
Well, here, let's go through the ballot measures really quick. Then.
Well, people, I mean, I would like us to be able to talk about them in a leisurely way.
So people, if they have a cheat sheet there, they can write down Measure 1A, fast rail. Okay, I'm in favor of it, okay?
I do want to hear your personal recommendations, but we've got to have time to talk about it. Well, we do have time
to
talk.
Come on, there's only 12 of them, Robert.
Yeah, I know, but I don't want 2 minutes apiece. This isn't the city council. Come on. Why don't you talk about the candidates?
The candidates?
The city council candidates and why you think we should either not vote for them or consider voting for them. There's only 9 of them, and we have 9 minutes left. How about 1 minute per candidate?
Oh, geez, I don't even need that much time. Tony Madrigal. The dumbest guy that was ever on the city council. He makes friggin' Michael Hernandez look like a genius. And it's like,
well, wait a minute. He's a labor candidate. How can you say that?
He has voted every anti-labor project that's come down the pike. He's voted for it, even though it was all these votes have been 7-0. He wouldn't even make it 6-1 and stand up for labor and say, "I'm not going to vote." You know, even though I know the city needs this project to make more money.
Now, wait a minute. He voted for the Coast Hotel project.
He voted for the Coast Hotel project, which was supposed to be have good labor practices, but it was giving away $30 million worth of city money, which for a broke city to be giving away $30 million doesn't seem like a very responsible thing to be doing.
Well, what about, hasn't he voted on a number of occasions for different projects that at least are built with union labor?
No, there has never been a project that he has voted on in his 4 years that was done with union labor, unless it was a project done by the city, like repairing a bridge or something like that. But as far as, you know, George Owl project, or a Barry Swenson project, or a Brooks project, you know, his favorite developer who is trying to be sleazier than Barry Swenson ever thought of being, you know, they were going to steal Ron Lau's land to give it to Brooks. And then Ron Lau sold, you know, under duress, you know, under threat of eminent domain, he sold his property.
That's the property that used to be the old Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Right. You know, and actually Ron's idea for that property was better than what Brooks is doing. Brooks wants to build condos there. Ron Lau wanted to build a hotel. We don't have a hotel downtown anymore.
But we have the Rittenhouse building. Aren't you happy about that?
No. Who's the tenant?
Well, some fine businesses will move
in. No, there's nobody lined up to rent that place, you know. We've got a bunch of condos down on the other side of the clock tower that were just built that aren't selling. Nobody's buying them.
You certainly have a low opinion of our developers and our city council.
Well, it's just, you know, they're a bunch of sellouts to a bunch of sleazy developer.
Well, what about Catherine Byers? Now, there's a woman who stood up for the homeless and supported police review.
When?
Early in her reign, back in the early 90s.
Maybe. But, you know, it was actually Catherine that got our friend Karen Gillette fired from her job. Even though they made it look like Karen,
Karen was the head of the homeless community resource.
Yeah, even though they made it look like Karen, you know, retired or stepped out or whatever.
Well, I've had problems with Byers because she sold out.
You had problems with Karen, too.
She sold out on the sleeping ban. Yeah, and Karen didn't do too well with real homeless people who challenged her policies. She encouraged violence against them, like against Linda Edwards and so forth.
Well, I don't know about that personally.
I do, yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, go ahead. So what about Don Lane? Now, there's a man who's run an ice cream business, the Saturn Cafe.
You know, it was a government-funded ice cream business. He ran it into the ground. You know, it wasn't self-sustaining. He was, He got this big government stipend to start this business so that, like, teenagers at risk could come in there and work and learn about, you know, not only how to work, but how to deal with the public and all that kind of stuff. He ran the thing into the ground. You know, it's like, I mean, Don Lane is the last person I'd want to see in charge of this town. Just because he's just...
Well, maybe you don't like, you know, he's been
sucking at the public teat ever since he got out of office 20 years ago.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, you may not like Don, but surely you have something that Tim Fitzmaurice is pretty close to your heart. Now, there's a man who, let's see, what is he? He actually opposed the parking lot panic law that Ryan Coonerty championed.
The only things I like about Tim are, one, he's for slow development. Two, he's the only city council member that will argue with Rockin at a city council meeting. I mean, supposedly other people do it, you know, behind closed doors. But he will actually, you know, take Mike to task at a city council meeting, which, you know, whether you liked him or not, I think that's a good thing.
So that means you're voting for council member or Fuhrer Fitzmaurice?
Not necessarily, Robert.
I see.
Okay, so then we got this...
Wait a minute. We have a mayor who's running, Ryan Coonerty.
Ryan is like... The way I understand it, Ryan's a big crybaby. When things don't go his way, he calls his father and cries about it. That's the story I get. And that's why,
of course, DiCenzo claims in his latest cartoon.
Right, that's why that's in there, because that's the rumor going around, is that Ryan cries to his dad all the time. And he's a big...
Well, his father is a supervisor and the president of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, where tonight you can actually go down and talk to Bill Monag and Tom Hayden and Ryan Coonerty about his civil libertarian positions after you finish talking to Mike Rotkin at 99 Bottles of Beer. They're both
yeah.
of them downtown
no,
tonight.
What about Groovy Judy? Come on.
What's that?
Groovy Judy.
Groovy Judy, yeah. Oh, that's the thing you're going to.
Yes.
Well, you know, we're talking with Scott Graham, who used to be a regular attendant at city council meetings, but hasn't been seen there in many a moon.
Well, I go once in a while when there's an issue that perks my interest. I'm just not one of these, you know, what do they call people like you, curmudgeons? Gadfly.
Well, actually, I wasn't at the last city council meeting. I think Bernard
oh, you
Kutzer
lost your gadfly status?
Well, I think I may have been flying around somewhere else. I mean, they're more productive people to gadfly.
Okay,
than
so let's go back to the initiatives. Okay.
Well, we'd like to, but I'm afraid we have run out of time.
Children's hospitals, no.
Go ahead. Well, you can do a
waiting
quick
period for
soundbite here.
Parental notification for teenage abortions, no. Are you taking me off the air? Is that what?
No, you're on the air.
Nonviolent drug offense sentencing, parole, and rehabilitation. Yes. Police law enforcement funding, criminal penalties law. So this is the supposedly gang enhancement law. No, because they're going to use that on everybody, not just gangs. And even if they're just using it on gangs, it's unfair to just do it to one segment of society. Renewable energy. Yes. Even though, you know, there's like millions of dollars going into the no campaign, so I'm voting yes on that one. Although usually I don't vote yes on things that mean more taxes. Prop 8, no. Criminal justice system victims' rights, no. Alternative fuel vehicles and renewable energy bond, no. Redistricting, no. Veterans Bond Act, no. And the City of Santa Cruz Measure E, no. So you got all that?
Actually, I didn't get any of it, but those who are listening may have.
What are you doing, listening to some tape or something?
No, actually, I have to prepare to leave before the fearsome Uncle Dennis appears with his nostalgia.
Just lock the door so you can't get in.
What's that?
Just lock the door so you can't get in.
I could do that, but, you know, why cause conflicts?
Why, you think they'll, like, have a special meeting?
We're talking with Scope It Out Scott Graham, who hopefully will be back to actually discuss the reasons, which I think are, frankly, more interesting than simply itemizing yes, no,
yeah,
yes,
I understand that, Robert. You just didn't give me... You want to, like, have me badmouth all the people on the city council.
No, I just wanted certain segments, not necessarily badmouth. You might have some good things to say. You said a few. What about writing in Robert Norris as a possible candidate?
Well, unless you're an official write-in candidate, you can't write in people that aren't officially. On an official list of write-in candidates, because if you do that, it nullifies your ballot and they throw your ballot away.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because
well, Scott,
if anybody writes in Madison for president, their ballot gets thrown away.
Well, that's an interesting point.
Because that will make their ballot distinct from anybody else.
We hope you'll explore that on Sunday when you come back.
Fix your window?
Yeah, the window of my car definitely needs some work. And, what are people going to say if my car gets all wet?
I don't know. Why don't you put a plastic bag over it?
That may be. I tried that. Last time I tried it, the police officer pulled his gun on me. But
that's
another story. Yeah. I've actually talked about that on the air. We've been talking with Scott Graham. Scott, I do appreciate your calling in. I'd like you to come into the studio on Sunday. Maybe you can. Probably
okay.
You won't. But if you do, you'll be welcome.
All right. Take care, Robert.
Thanks, man.
Bye. Bye-bye.
That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You can replay this if you'd like at HuffSantaCruz.org, www.HuffSantaCruz.org, where the shows are archived. And it sounds like we have a caller. Let's see, since Dennis has not arrived yet. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I need to correct Mr. Graham. It's Madison Fitzgerald, and I am an official write-in candidate, Mr. Graham, so you can write my name down legally.
Hey. Well,
thank you,
Madison.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So there you are, an official write-in candidate that you may even know personally and you've actually heard on the air arguing the issues. Let's go out on some of the music of my favorite group, or one of my favorite groups, that actually talks about local issues, and people have actually been on the streets of Santa Cruz and not just viewed them from afar. Here's Uncle Dennis, who just arrived in the studio. Only 2.5 minutes late.
Couldn't find a place to park.
Don't want to hear your excuses, Uncle Dennis.
Oh, really? There's some kind of football game going on.
Well, you have something against
there's
sports?
A big party in the
a party. Call the unruly party ordinance people. Let's get them going on this.
Anyway, I'm here.
Well, here he is. And while he sets up, we'll play a little bit from Just Kidding.
Just before you go.
Yes.
I want to clear up a
Yes. Okay, go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, I want to clear up a misstatement by your previous guest. And that is that the Sierra Club neither endorsed a yes vote or a no vote on Prop E. Now, the chairman of the local executive committee, Aldo Giacano, did come out against Prop E. But that is not the Sierra Club. We did not endorse nor did a yes or a no vote on that.
And Prop E, for those who don't know, is the stormwater, the tax for increase. What is it, a sales tax?
No, it's a property tax.
Property,
it's 28 bucks for private homeowners and $56 or $90 or something like that for a commercial property.
And is this actually, are you familiar with, you were here 10 years ago, right? Would you think Mr. Graham is accurate in saying that they passed something similar that didn't get spent for that purpose?
That there is still money remaining in that account, and the problem with Prop E, and I happen to agree with Aldo on this, is that and this is my personal account. This is not the Sierra Club talking. This is Uncle Dennis. Is that
are you a terrorist?
Is that
didn't answer the question. Notice
Prop
folks.
E is
I'm calling the grand
basically
jury.
A blank check for the city for projects that they haven't defined. While it's true that they will have to come up with some way to comply with the Coastal Commission's stormwater runoff, I don't think they ought to be collecting money until they actually have something to spend on it.
So the money will be going into the general fund. They can do whatever they want with it, that sort of thing, or?
No.
It will be limited.
Prop E is limited to stormwater projects, but they haven't defined any.
I see. And in the previous measure was also in a similar situation, and they didn't spend the money?
They haven't completed spending all that money, no.
Did they spend some of it on stormwater?
Yeah, some of it's spent on stormwater. A lot more of it's been spent on bridge reconstruction.
Interesting. Maybe you'll talk more about that on your show. I want to thank you for enlightening us, Dennis. And I'm sure the Sierra Club is breathing a sigh of relief. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'll be back on Sunday. Between now and then, this is your opportunity to go to a human rights organization meeting in the rain, probably. 2 o'clock tomorrow. 2 o'clock on Sunday. No, let's get straight. 2 o'clock on Saturday. There we go. At the Taqueria Vallarta at 2 o'clock. It'll be at 2 o'clock, that is. Let's make that at 2 o'clock. And also, there'll be a cop watch tomorrow night at 9 o'clock in the evening, Cathcart and Pacific, right across from Taqueria Vallarta, Kitty Corner, next to the 1010 Pacific Apartments. Bring your video camera and, of course, a football helmet if you're afraid of getting beaten up. But we don't anticipate any problems of that kind. After all, we know our police department takes a kinder, gentler approach. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
And welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. My name is Uncle Dennis, and you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, and we're also on the Wide Weird Web at freakradio.org. Welcome to my show every Thursday evening from 8 to 11. I'm sitting here adjusting the board for reasons that shouldn't happen. But anyway, we're going to be playing a lot of really good music tonight. Stay tuned. Right up a few minutes from now, we'll be opening up our Brew of the Week. We have a special Thanksgiving brew, which we will be tasting tonight. We also, at 9 o'clock, of course, the Earth First Update, environmental news that you can use. And at 10 o'clock tonight, we're going to have our Spotlight Group of the Week. Unfortunately, this week, our Spotlight Group is going to be Merle Saunders. Merle Saunders died this past Sunday, and so we're going to do a memorial for Earl Saunders coming up at 10 o'clock. Merle Saunders, not Merle Haggard, as some people have mentioned here in the last few minutes. No, no, no. Merle Saunders, famous good organ player and sideman for Jerry Garcia. And he's sat in as a sideman on many Grateful Dead albums and had a quite vibrant collaboration with Jerry Garcia on many projects outside of the Grateful Dead. And we'll be reviewing Merle Saunders' life and some of his music starting at 10 o'clock. So stay tuned for that. Right now, we're going to get into some Allman Brothers for you. This off their album, Live at Ludlow Garage, the Allman Brothers.
Your face.